Our next speaker is Dr. Brian Haggard from the University of Arkansas. He's going to talk with you about stream phosphorus and nitrogen trends in a watershed under a court-mandated index.
First, I'll acknowledge my co-authors, Thad Scott and Andrew Sharpley, and especially Josh Romeus, who many of you know passed away a few years ago. He's the one who actually started this project, and I took it upon myself to submit an abstract so I would have to finish this project. And so that's why I'm able to present this here today. The Uchi-Spavinaw watershed, it's a transboundary watershed between Arkansas and Oklahoma. I'm going to give you some brief details because Andrew Sharpley is going to be speaking later, and he'll go into a little bit more details about the watershed and the landscape management changes that occurred. But basically in 2001, the city of Tulsa filed a lawsuit against the poultry companies based in northwest Arkansas. Prior study in the late 90s, the city of Tulsa had observed increasing phosphorus concentrations in Lakes Uchi and Spavinaw, which is provides about half of their drinking water supply to their citizens, and they've also noticed an increase in taste and odor events. And so they filed a lawsuit against the poultry industry related to them being the source, as well as one municipal effluent discharge, the source of this phosphorus getting into their drinking water supply reservoirs. And so the lawsuit went on. I was fortunate enough to be a federal employee, so I didn't have to testify, which was something that was really nice at that point in time in my career. One interesting thing is the judge that ruled on this case for the calendar year 2003, there was a moratorium on litter application. So any of the contract growers for the companies involved in this lawsuit, none of them could apply poultry litter for the calendar year 2003. And when the settlement agreement was reached in 2004, the three main things you want to take from this is they shifted to phosphorus-based management of poultry litter applications in this watershed. The Uchi-Spavinaw Phosphorus Index was implemented in 2004. They had a court-mandated soil test phosphorus threshold of 300 ppm measured on a 0 to 10 centimeter soil sample, and the wastewater treatment plant had to reduce its effluent discharge down to less than 1 milligram of phosphorus per liter. Here's an aerial view of the Uchi-Spavinaw watershed. The streams flow from your right to left, and so they flow from Arkansas into Oklahoma. And to give you an idea of the land use, it's 51% forest, 43% pasture. There's 3% row crop. There are some green beans grown in this basin, and then it's about 3% rural urban. So there's a very small urban influence within this watershed. Most of the poultry operations are located within the region within this circle here, near the Arkansas-Oklahoma state line on the Oklahoma side, and then throughout northwest Arkansas. And that's the main form of agriculture that's going on in this basin. It's paired poultry and beef cattle operations. And, you know, and these have been longstanding, and throughout the 90s, the number of poultry operations in this area had grown. The sources within this watershed to consider, the sources of phosphorus, you know, at the landscape level, land application of poultry litter is definitely one of the ones that we need to consider, and that was one of the focuses of the lawsuit. Commercial fertilizers do occur within this basin. There are many hay producers who apply commercial fertilizer, you know, as a secondary application following litter application in the spring. Cattle deposition, that's a big unknown, and it was identified by the lawsuit as one of the huge unknowns is, you know, how much phosphorus is actually getting into the system by direct deposition from cattle within the riparian area or into the stream. And then the effluent discharges, and this area was also covered by the lawsuit. And there's one primary effluent discharge which flows in right about the Arkansas-Oklahoma state line from the city of Decatur. Fluvial processes that need to be thought about is, you know, is once we leave the edge of the field where our phosphorus index is often applied, is, you know, we need to be thinking about channel erosion and what impacts that can have on phosphorus transport downstream, riparian floodplain, and channel storage. The channels can store phosphorus as well as the floodplain. Phosphorus can deposit outside of there. And then also an issue that we need to consider within the stream channel is legacy phosphorus. You know, this phosphorus has gotten there, and it's when we turn off the pipe, so to speak, we turn down the what's getting in there, it's not going to be an immediate release of that phosphorus. It's going to slowly leak out over time. And then also, when you're looking at this on the watershed scale, you have to think about the lakes themselves and what reservoir processes can contribute phosphorus. And you can have reductive dissolution of phosphorus bound to the bottom sediments. And there's been some recent studies in this area that have shown that organic mineralization is actually a large contributor to available phosphorus within the bottom sediments of reservoirs. Basically, what happened after the lawsuit was still a little bit of Andrew's thunder here, but roughly following the lawsuit, after they started applying poultry litter again, poultry litter application rates were about reduced by about a third, and about 75% of the total litter produced within this basin was now being exported to other regions. And one of the problems is we don't know if it was exported out of the watershed or to other fields that were not owned by contract growers within the watershed, but 75% of this litter was being moved around. And the wastewater treatment plant made huge improvements. You can see here the graph, the y-axis has effluent total phosphorus concentrations ranging from 0 to 5. And so, you know, from 2001 to about 2005, the average concentration was somewhere between 2 and 3 milligrams per liter of phosphorus. If you go to the time period before that, when I was also sampling this stream in the late 90s, we saw phosphorus concentrations in stream exceeding 10 milligrams per liter of phosphorus. And so the effluent was having a huge impact on this system. And you can see, you go past that dotted line going through the middle of the graph, and that's about the time frame of 2005, you know, a year or two after the settlement. And you can see the effluent phosphorus concentrations are now well below 1 milligram per liter. And so they were meeting the guidelines set forth in the settlement agreement, you know, almost immediately after the settlement agreement came out. And they were mainly doing it by using chemical addition. And they've since then gone through and updated the wastewater treatment plant to where they're utilizing a combination of biological removal as well as chemical. But it was mainly the effect that you see here is due to alum treatment of the effluent before it's released out into the environment. And so, you know, the big question is, you know, we've seen all these modeling studies doing these comparisons, and we've seen edge-of-field studies that show reductions in phosphorus loss, but, you know, what's going on at the watershed scale where it really matters? Because that's where a lot of our key stakeholders are really monitoring this, is at the larger watershed scale. And so we're fortunate enough in this basin that the City of Tulsa and the USGS have been maintaining a water quality monitoring program since 2001. And so basically the City of Tulsa goes out on a fixed interval basis and collects one sample every month. And then they hired the USGS to go out and collect six storm event samples a year. So there's 18 water samples that are collected at each one of these sites you see here listed. And so there's the upper site is Beatty Creek. That's a separate tributary that flows into Lake Uchee. It's not impacted by any point sources. And then you have Spavinaw Creek flowing through the middle of the stream. And Spavinaw Creek, Maysville, that's the most upstream site. There's no significant point source impact at that site. When you go down to Cherokee, in between there, the tributary that flows in between those sites, that's the major wastewater treatment plant in this basin. That's the City of Decatur. And so that's where you'll see an obvious impact in phosphorus concentrations. And then as you move further downstream, you have Sycamore Creek and Coal Cord, and they start integrating a little bit more of land use impacts. And quite honestly, by the time you get down to Coal Cord, there's, you know, that basin becomes quite a bit forested down at the lower end down there. And so, you know, we take this data and we look at, this is phosphorus concentrations from Spavinaw Creek at Maysville. And so this is the most upstream site. We're going to, on Spavinaw Creek, we're going to start at the upstream end. And we look at this, and you have a log scale of phosphorus concentrations on the y-axis to try and keep everything on the same range. But, you know, and that's as a function of time, you know, starting in July 2001 through June 2011. And, you know, you look at that and you're like, well, maybe there's a pattern there, but how do you draw a pattern through this over time, looking at phosphorus concentrations in streams? It's really difficult to really tell what's going on by looking at this graph, because we know that, you know, these changes in phosphorus concentration represent the episodic transport from the landscape. It's those rainfall runoff events in our region that are occurring that result in these high phosphorus concentrations. And so it's when you sample, you know, what time of year you're sampling, how much rainfall events you have that year. And we know that phosphorus concentrations in the streams in this region are pretty, you know, highly correlated to how much, what the discharge is. And you can see here, this is another log-based graph with log concentrations on the y-axis and log discharge on the x-axis. And you can see there's as discharge increases, phosphorus concentrations increase as well. And what we do is we fit a locally weighted regression line, a lowest line through that relationship, and that's what we use to define our relationship between discharge and concentration. And then we take the residuals of that line, so we take all these data points and look at that relative to what the average phosphorus concentration should be at that line, and those residuals represent our flow-adjusted concentrations. So now we've adjusted that concentration relative to flow. And so if it's less than average, it's going to have a negative value. The residual is going to have a negative value. And if it's greater than what you see on average, you're going to have a positive value. And so then you take those values there and you plot them over time. And that's how you can remove the effect of discharge and look and see how phosphorus concentrations are changing over time. So this is Spavinaw Creek at Maysville. R-squared value, 0.01. There's nothing going on at this site. Despite the changes at the landscape level that we've seen, we do not see any phosphorus trends occurring at this site. The p-value is 0.2. There's really nothing going on at this site. So we have not seen any significant change in phosphorus concentration at the most upstream site that's primarily impacted solely by non-point sources. Now we move to the site downstream, Spavinaw Creek at Cherokee. You can see now there's a little bit of curvature. And if you just do simple linear regression, you can explain 53% of the variation in flow-adjusted concentrations with time. And so what that's telling us is that phosphorus concentrations are, in fact, decreasing. So you go one site downstream, the site downstream of the effluent discharge, and we see that phosphorus concentrations are, in fact, decreasing. And we can walk our way further downstream. Notice the line is kind of flattening out as we're moving down Spavinaw Creek, and so the slope is about 20% less than it was at the previous site, and then about 25% less than it was at the previous site here. But at all three sites on Spavinaw Creek downstream, we did see a significant decrease in phosphorus concentrations. You look at Baby Creek. Sorry, the line's going to the wrong thing. This is Baby Creek. Phosphorus concentrations there, again, solely impacted by non-point sources, no significant change in phosphorus concentrations at this site. And so to kind of summarize, we saw no change at Baby Creek or Spavinaw Creek at Maysville, but the three sites within that circle, we definitely saw a decrease in phosphorus concentrations there. And we applied these same techniques to look at nitrogen as well, because the lake studies we've done in Lake Uchi have shown us that the phytoplankton growing there are seasonally limited also by nitrogen. And so what you see there is we saw no change in nitrogen at three of the sites, Spavinaw Creek at Maysville, Cherokee, or Colcord, but we actually saw a very slight increase in total nitrogen trends at Baby Creek and and Spavinaw Creek at Sycamore. Very slight increases, only explaining 3-4% in the variation of flow-adjusted nitrogen concentrations over time, but they were significant, p-values less than 0.05. And, you know, I'll leave you with this thought. The impacts of what's going on in Lake Uchi vary by stakeholders. You know, these guys right here catching these 6 to 10 pound largemouth, they like the eutrophication that's going on in this watershed, but the drinking water providers don't. And with that, I'll be glad to take any questions. Yes, Nathan. We didn't see any change due to the implementation of the Uchi Spavinaw Phosphorus Index, the export of litter, or the reduction in litter application rates.
And so I guess I'll ask you, do you have any possible explanation for why that lack in trend is there?
Yeah, I think when we look at the continuum, you know, if we look at phosphorus as a spiral as opposed to a cycle moving from the fields to the stream, we don't really know how long it takes to complete that spiral of moving from the edge of field to the tributaries to these monitoring points that we had established here. And so, you know, I would say our hope is that it's just we haven't collected data long enough to see those decreases. It is very interesting that and of course it makes sense because time of travel is zero almost essentially for effluent discharges because they discharge directly into the stream, and so you see the immediate impact there, but not at those other two sites. Brad?
Brian, I missed the very beginning of your talk, so maybe you covered this, but did you look at, you mentioned legacy phosphorus in the sediments. Have you looked at, dissolution of phosphorus in the sediments? Is it internal loading that's maybe kind of keeping these levels? I mean, that's awful high, but I was wondering if that is a contributor or you look at it.
You know, oddly, upstream, the total phosphorus concentrations are about 0.03 or 0.04. So they're not very high. But downstream of the of where the wastewater treatment plant comes in, there was a definite try with the equilibrium concentration in the phosphorus and also with how much malic 3 phosphorus was tied in the sediments. Anyone else? Thank you very much.